It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Josh Brown, there is tons of gaming news eventually, but we're going to talk about all sorts of different things that we've been playing because video games are slowly coming back.
They really are, Scott, it man. Seems. I was looking at my two-player list over the weekend, and it is huge, both new games and old games. It is crazy. And to be fair, before we jump in, actually,
yes.
I want to say something because I noticed yesterday was my fifth-year anniversary at WhatCulture.com.
To the day?
To the day.
No way.
So technically, in working day terms, this is the anniversary edition of my first day.
Aww.
So this is why I was wanting to be selfish and talk about the games we've played, because I thought I get one free pass a year and I want to talk about Dragon Ball Z Kakarot, which is why I pushed it hard.
As well you should. I think that I was going to say we do this every wind up every Monday. We talk about what we want to play, but you should make it all about yourself, which is to say that we can talk about Dragon Ball, because who doesn't love a little bit of Dragon Ball? We'll also get to, I've been playing a lot of Splatoon 3. You've been playing through Midnight Fight Express. You've also been playing through Sam Barlow's latest game, Immortality. But we'll get to all that as we go. And if we have time, we'll dive into some new stuff. But I think we'll just focus on what we're playing, because it's fun to talk about games for a change. 2022 has not that many games, but you got back into Dragon Ball. As is a weird, it's sort of like an airwave does the rounds, where we sort of like prick up and go, Dragon Ball's a thing again. And then it was like the movie came out, Adam Nicholas is rewatching it again. I've rewatched a whole ton of Z. I watched the Cell Saga, the Boo Saga. Now I'm into Super. Saw the superhero movie. It's awesome. Well, it's good fun. It's awesome. There's a big payoff at the end. It's awesome. And then you kind of just bought Dragon Ball Z Kakarot,
yeah,
which is a good few years old, but yeah.
It's like a domino effect, man. Once someone in your sphere starts talking about Dragon Ball again, suddenly it becomes your whole life. And somehow,
as well it should.
Fortnite obviously knew this by doing the Dragon Ball crossover,
that
which
too.
Again, you know, got everyone talking about it. But yeah, I was playing Fighters, which we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. And while I loved the craft of it, fighting games, especially 2D fighting games, aren't necessarily my thing. I've had this craving for the Dragon Ball Z RPG that goes through the entire Z storyline, you know, the major sagas and the Z storyline. Shout out to my boy Gallic Jr., who does not appear in this game. I went and bought it on Friday, and I've played it like 8 hours over the weekend. Uh-huh. I'm on to Namek, just got there last night. And man, this game is so much fun.
Yes.
It starts so incredibly ropey.
I was so curious what you were going to think about it, because I feel like, I think it does a really good job of condensing the sagas. If you just want to play through all of Z, basically, it goes all the way through to the end of the Boo Saga, you can, and they do a good job of like just picking the main fights out of it that you're going to want to play and letting you play as everyone from Piccolo to Vegeta. Ironically, Goku's barely in it. Like, you play as Piccolo and Vegeta and Trunks way more than Kakarot.
Well,
but still,
this is what I was laughing at last night, because I forgot how much in the Z series Goku was like put out of commission because he's just too powerful and it'd be boring if it was all about him. It's like every major saga, it's like Goku's having a rest.
He's got a virus
months.
Now.
Yeah,
so,
he's got a virus. Yeah. We need to play as these other characters. Which makes for fun storytelling, but like you said, it's funny in a game called Kakarot that you play as Goku very little early on. But it does make the moments, I must admit, where he shows up to take on, you know, Vegeta, for instance, in the Saiyan Saga, really satisfying, because he comes back so much more powerful, and you feel as strong as Goku should in those moments, if that makes sense.
I'll tell you what I loved about it is that, because it was the first game, as far as I know, to map out the Dragon Ball world and let you, they kind of advertised it, or they talked about it as like, oh, you can fly from like the Kami House all the way through to you know, the capsule core or whatever, and you can't necessarily, you're sort of loading into different zones, but they still let you kick off the ground and fly around the Dragon Ball world, which is just cool. Like, you can fly around the city. Some of the main areas do have like city parts and desert parts, and they don't need loading in between them. That's the nearest thing I've got to being able to fly around this world, which the new movie does. There's a whole thing in the superhero movie where Piccolo takes off, and they rendered it all in 3D, so you actually get to see him, his perspective as he takes off. Little things like that we've waited decades to see rendered better. there. I think this game, like, for as much as it gives you flight mechanics, they didn't feel good. You're just rotating a static camera, character model, like, through the air.
Yeah,
it's not really got much weight to it. Even Anthem did it better for the most part.
It could be better, I will give you that. However, the thrill of it is still there for me because of the sense of speed. Like, you go so fast, whether you're sprinting or whether you're, like, flying at high speed around the world. Like, there's a real sense of spectacle there, which, of course, it's Dragon Ball Z. You need that spectacle. And yeah, the mechanics could be more intuitive. It feels strange to go up and down with the triggers.
Yeah.
And I keep getting them mixed up. I keep pressing R1 to go down when it's R2 to go down, which doesn't make sense in my brain.
Yeah, why is up and down on the same side? That's a weird thing.
Stuff like that is obtuse. There's a lot about the game that is obtuse, but I must admit, just the thrill of being able to do, even in a compartmentalized sense, what you said there about being able to kick off the ground and fly around these rendered worlds that we've only seen kind of as backdrops in the original show and stuff was a thrill. And if I had this game when I was younger, man, I mean, I'm loving it now, but if I had this game when I was like in my teens, I would have... like played nothing else forever because this would be all that I would want to do.
Well, another thing that I think it nails, because I love FighterZ. I think that is the perfect Dragon Ball game. I get that it's not for everyone if you're not a fan of like anime fighters or whatever, because it can be quite chaotic. But in terms of replicating how the action is in Dragon Ball, the sort of choreography, how fast it all is, and then once you get that game down, like keeping up with it all, I do think like FighterZ gets this better. But Kakarot's fighting, I think, is still very, very solid, and I love that you can burn your energy to teleport, like to go behind a guy and elbow them out the sky, which every character does at one point in Dragon Ball, or like charge up a Kamehameha or whatever it is. And obviously, you know, give me characters yelling out their moves as they fire like special beam cannon, and he's like across the canyons or whatever, launching a guy through a mountain as it says like victory or whatever. It's like stuff like that is really, really cool.
Well, this is it. You know, obviously I'm not going to say that the combat in Kakarot has the depth of FighterZ or necessarily the spectacle of FighterZ. However, it's a combat system that I want from a Dragon Ball game. In terms of its spectacle and in terms of some of the moves that you said there, you know, like the scale of the fights, being able to knock people through, you know, entire mountains and then follow it up with a teleported elbow to the back. All of that is great. I like the length of the fights, the fact that sometimes you're fighting multiple enemies that you can take out quite quickly, whereas other times you're fighting, you know, one boss essentially with a massive health bar, and those fights take a lot out of you, and they are lengthy, but also because they're so lengthy, they require actually some tactical thinking. Yeah. Like, I don't think you can get through this game by just, you know, mashing the fight button, for lack of a better term, and then expecting to win. You need to be able to block. You need to be able to decide when to teleport, when to use those special moves. Mm-hmm. And that was a level of depth that I just wasn't expecting at all from this game. And I appreciated it in how it, you know, impacted the flow of these fights and kept them kind of way more balanced than I expected.
The only thing in that regard that it's not that I don't like it, but it's a bit like stock, is just, it's like RPG 101. It's like, this character is 5 levels above you, therefore their basic punch will kill you in one hit.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, stuff like that, I wish we could move away from entirely. I hate it in The Witcher 3. I hate it in like Assassin's Creed or whatever. Like that sort of basic attempt at leveling an open world, where I'd say, well, let me sort of still deflect. If I get my timing right, I should be able to take these people on to some degree.
I'm going to tell you why I like it in this game.
Do it.
Because obviously so much of Dragon Ball, at least in the early parts of the show, is about like power levels, right? And people being completely overpowered compared to our heroes.
9,000!
Yeah, of course, you know? And I do like that there are some enemies that are just so above your level that they will punch you dead. You need to effectively, quote-unquote, train, as they would explain it in-universe, to
get to that point. Oh, there's a ton of grinding.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And for me, the grinding may become an issue, but for right now, I do like the fact that I feel demonstrably much more powerful than I was at the start of the game, which makes sense with the story, right? Because now I'm on Namek, now Gohan has had a lot of training, and he's now punching like 300 damage points where he was punching 12 initially. Right. And it's that reason and that reason alone, while I don't mind the kind of arbitrary levels of your character versus enemies in this game, because I would hate it in Assassin's Creed or something like you mentioned that, or even The Witcher, but here it makes narrative sense.
Oh god,
and I can kind of go with it a little bit.
No, I think the thing is, like, as like, it's not like a massively long game, but I mean, like you said, you've just done the beginning, so you've done all the Raditz stuff, you're in Namek, and then you've got all the Android stuff, you've got like the Cell games, and then you got all the Boo stuff. So I think like over time it falls back on that a lot, where it's like, well, now go spend some time leveling up, and it's like, I just want to do the story stuff, but like at some some point you're fighting bosses which, like you say, have like 8 health bars, because like once you deplete one, it just changes color and it's like, do it again. And every hit they're doing is taking off 3/4 of your life bar, even if it's just their basic slap or whatever. So, you know, you can kind of like tank those fights by just taking loads of health items to get through them. But it's one of those things where I kind of wish they had some sort of alternative to just go grind, because I feel that's what the newer Assassin's Creeds have done. Where it's just like, just go take a few hours to grind. Whereas like, yeah, for the most part, the stuff in Kakarot, I think just, it's just so much fun. If you have that love of Dragon Ball, which we do because we grew up with it, how have you found that side of it? Like, have you been enjoying like revisiting storylines and stuff like that?
Yeah, man, it's great. I mean, part of the reason why I wanted to play this over Fighters was that I want to get into Dragon Ball Super. You know, I got Crunchyroll to watch all of those. Yes.
I bought a box set and then realized it was all Crunchyroll. Good. You did. I like it.
You did. But hey, you got that in your house forever now. You know?
I like looking at it.
You're not a slave to the subscription service anymore. So I kind of just wanted a refresher of the story, and this has given me that, and then some. You know, it does condense some stuff that I would have liked to have seen expanded. Mm. Like some of the moves, for instance, it just assumes you know. Like it's like, Goku knows the Kaioken now, and it's like,
what is
that? You know, I know what it is because I've seen the show and, you know, familiar with it. But if you're like playing this story for the first time, I do think there would be gaps in the knowledge that you would need. But for the most part, it nails the big scenes and nails them, you know, incredibly well in terms of how it visually recreates, you know, like the shots.
Plus, like the whole cast comes back. I love how there's a whole like sound, like audible audio footprint to Dragon Ball, like the teleportation noise, the takeoff noise. When someone gets launched and does that little pew, or whatever it is, it's not really like that, but it's a die pitch thing. And all that, when you're controlling all of it, I think, like, I mean, yeah, I think Kakarot and FighterZ are a perfect combo, because if you want the narrative side of it or to play through Z, it's Kakarot. But if you want to actually do like the most intense fights, then it's FighterZ. But together they go very well.
100%, man. And what you just said there about like the kind of Sonic footprint, I mean that in terms of auditory stuff, not actual Sonic the Hedgehog. He's not in this game.
Is there a day that goes by that I don't think about Sonic Frontiers? No, there is not.
But that's another thing that kind of blew me away initially, like just being able to not only take off and then start flying around, but to have that audio footprint follow me with those like iconic sound effects. Mm-hmm. That's what took me back to being a kid, and that's why I would have loved it even more had I been in the actual, you know, peak Dragon Ball Z mindset that I was in at the time.
I have two questions. One, what do you think of the fishing mini game? And two, who's your favorite character?
One, the fishing mini game, like mechanically sucks, but is so funny.
The animation's so fun.
So watch, like, watching someone whip out a tail, you know, whack it on. I was playing it where my girlfriend was watching, and she was like, why is he fishing with his own tail? Is that not like unsanitary? And it is true, but
when you catch a huge fish and they just like uppercut it out the sky, it lands behind you. It's just like, yeah, that's what we're eating today. Like, no, that's fun.
I like that stuff. That stuff's really funny. My favorite character. My favorite character used to be Gohan before I grew up. Everything from young Gohan into teen Gohan. Mm-hmm. However, as I've matured, it's my boy Piccolo, man.
It might be, yeah. I'm a Vegeta man, but I get the Piccolo love.
Yes.
That's why you should watch Superhero, because there's a lot of Piccolo in there.
Well, I must admit, I did sort of punch the air last night because I took control of Vegeta for the first time on Namek, and I was like, this is cool, man.
Awesome. Isn't the first time he plays him when he has the pink shirt on, which is the best attire ever?
It's not, however, best attire ever. Yeah. And I do agree with that. Pink shirt Vegeta is the king of everything.
The king of everything. I'm a massive Vegeta fan. Going back, and we were watching footage of Chris Sabat record his lines, which is just the best. Like, Super Vegeta! It's the best. But yeah, Dragon Ball, maybe we'll check back in as you play more of Kakarot. You've got a lot of stuff ahead of you.
Yeah.
But yeah, just shout out to Kakarot. I feel like that game was overlooked quite considerably just because it was, it's another Dragon Ball game. But it does attempt quite a lot of stuff, and condensing the entire saga is quite, like, not necessarily ambitious, but is like a unique thing to do.
I think
All the games try it, but like, all in one go is really good.
Yeah, I would echo that. I do think it is an ambitious game. Mm. The amount it tries to achieve with what I assume were the resources available, because you can tell that they're cutting some corners at certain points, but I can go with it more considering the scale that they've gone for and just how much they've packed in into that package.
I agree. Speaking of packing a lot into a package, you played the vast majority of Midnight Fight Express.
Yes.
A game that I debated doing a list, 10 sentences at once. I debated doing a list on games that just go. Like, because I think Midnight Fight Express is reminded me of how much Hotline Miami just goes. And there's some games that just hit the ground sprinting. It's like Halo 2 or whatever. It's like, here you are. Here's twin pistols. The aliens are coming around the corner. Go shoot them. And I'm just like, Midnight Fight Express, for as much as it's borrowing from Hotline Miami's overall vibe, obviously the music music is very synthy and whatever. It's so impactful that if you have a decent set of headphones or your TV is turned up or whatever, there's so much bass to every hit. I should also clarify that Midnight Fight Express is a sort of top-down melee brawler game with a bit of shooting in that sort of towards the end it becomes more of a shooter kind of thing, like a twin stick shooter almost. But yeah, it's just an excuse to go batter as many dudes as possible, to be honest. It's kind of like Hotline Miami meets the Warriors. Every couple of levels you meet another group of gang members, whether they're game devs that have gone rogue or just random gang members. But how have you found it?
I played this, Scott Telford, no joke, just because I know how much you were enjoying it, how much this game is your thing.
So I love when you do this. It's nothing I love more then when you go, and we go, what, you've been playing on the weekend? Then you go, I've played X thing that you said. I love that feeling.
And I absolutely smashed it yesterday. I'm not finished it yet, but I'm about 30 levels out of the 40 levels that are in the game, or at least unless there's some secret ones I don't know about.
There is
I'm
not
entirely sure. Well, there we go. I'm 3/4 of the way through, and I'm finding it pretty good. I'm going to make a lot of kind of like concessions because I do know this game was mostly made by just one person.
Yes.
And that is incredibly impressive for the quality on display. However, if I'm just taking it as a game that I've picked up off the store without that necessarily in mind, I'm finding it pretty good.
Yeah.
My issue is it wears its influences on its sleeve, and often it reminds me of those influences and just makes me wish I was playing those games instead because they kind of do what this is doing tighter. However, it is still a very fun experience and still gets a lot right. It's just I was hoping for a little bit more tightness to everything. And it's a little bit more messy than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, we talked about this before we were recording, because for me, I think Midnight's fire combat is so tight. I think it's just like, because obviously this year we've had that and Sifu, and we've kind of had this nice, lovely return to martial arts and melee combat in games. You just don't see it anymore. Like, I miss Sleeping Dogs. I miss that era. Sleeping Dogs was what, like 2011? Like,
God,
it's been a while. So yeah, with something like Midnight, for as much as, I wish I could remember the name of the dev, and we're recording this as our internet's dropped out in the office, so I can't even Google it, dude. I think it's David Svinzel, but I could be wrong. But anyway, made by one guy. And clearly that dude got a few people to just martial artists and just choreographed and recorded them and everything, motion captured. So that every single roundhouse kick, slam against a wall, backflip kick, whatever, for me is like perfect. And I get the, you can almost sort of say like, well, it's stitching these different things together. But I think when you get the various systems down, you're like roundhouse kicking a guy, picking up some item, throwing it at another guy, rolling out the way, grabbing a gun, shooting two dudes, throwing the gun at the next guy. Like, for me, it comes together in a way that makes me think like a John Wick, or makes me think like insert martial artist here kind of thing. In a way that I just want in games.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I want to do the lobby fight in The Matrix. Like, give me stuff like that.
No, I totally agree. And it's, my only issue is that everything that you just said there, minus maybe one feature or two, it's what I've already done in other games, and I've kind of got that
like
experience
what?
A little bit better. Sifu Man for me is like the direct comparison. I would love Midnight Fight Express so much more if I hadn't just played that earlier this year and gotten into it so much, because while it might not, like I said, have not some of the features that you just mentioned, the other features that it has are woven together to give me the same sense of flow that Midnight Fight Express attempts to, and just nail it better than this game, which Sifu's, is a shame for me.
Yeah, Sifu's way tighter. The thing that I think is so different is that Sifu puts you on the back foot, and it's like, okay, master this martial art. By the time you come out of Sifu, you're like, I feel like I've mastered a martial art. I've put the time in, I've taken my lumps, and it's a way harder game. Midnight is a way more over-the-top power fantasy. Like, you immediately can just do a double hit into a suplex. Yeah. Like, that's one of the first moves you can do. And so for me, like, Midnight, like I said, it just goes. Like, it's so much more overtly power fantasy that, for me, that differentiates it so much. Like, I wanted to have more power fantasy stuff in Sifu, but that game just hands you your own teeth at the beginning as much as possible. I know you did way better than I did until I got it down kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas Midnight is prioritizing ease of power, basically.
I would agree that it does prioritize power until it doesn't. And those are kind of my issues with the game in terms of when Midnight Fight Express is flowing and you are in the zone, it's incredible. Like, it's a really good game. Mm-hmm. However, the game, in my opinion, keeps introducing mechanics to stop that flow as much as possible.
There are
a lot of gimmick levels, for instance, which, for lack of a better term, where it'll throw you, say, a big shipping container that is barreling its way through the level, and you need to stop what you're doing to take note of the shipping container that will kill you in one hit or mostly in one hit.
Or some random zombies that can grab you from across the map.
Yeah, some random zombies or a sniper or someone with a rocket launcher or a grenade launcher or just grenades, you know? There's a lot of them.
Or big dudes that can like hit the ground and make you ragdoll, which makes you fall off a train. It's like, okay, sure.
And I get why they're in there. They're an attempt to shake things up and to differentiate the level design and have you think in a different way. And that's cool in theory. I just think in execution, it does seem antithesis to what the game does well, and it is giving you that power fantasy of a bunch of these different moves and encouraging a sense of flow that this kind of brings to a stop. And I'm sure if you get really good at the game, you can avoid these hazards while still rolling through combos, and you can do that to an extent the first time through, but they did feel strange in the way that they stopped the game's best asset, which is that kind of
in-the-moment
sense of flow. Yeah,
it's like, if we talk about what Hotline Miami sort of nailed, it was a sense of flow. And like when you get that game down, you can blitz through it. Like you can beat Hotline in like 2 hours if you know what you're doing kind of thing. Whereas the first time through it, you just died like 50 times. But like that whole idea of flow, it's one of my main issues with Rollerdrome. Like I love what Rollerdrome is and I had a lot of fun with it. But like that game is all about a sense of flow as well. However, the dodge burn interrupts your tricks. So like in that game, you're like stringing all this stuff together, doing headshots in slow motion, but like all these tracker enemies have lasers on you and they're firing missiles at you and they're going to sniper you, shoot you and everything unless you dodge. So you have to come out of your loop to dodge. It adds it to your multiplier, but you're still interrupting the flow.
Yeah.
And I'm just like kind of the same thing in Midnight, where you have so many opportunities to just string everything together, but here's a random sniper that kills you in one hit. Back to the start, like go do it all again. Here's a random container, like you said, that just lands out of nowhere and destroys everybody. If you're making a game about flow and you're wearing those influences on your sleeve, then yeah, why would you ever get in the way of that?
Totally, man. And I think it's totally valid to have, levels or even an entire game that kills you dead and is punishing. You know, Sifu and Hotline Miami that we're talking about both do that, where they're quite unforgiving until you learn the patterns.
Yep.
The issue that I have with Midnight is that half of the game isn't that. Half of the game is just letting you go through these levels in essentially one go, at least on the normal difficulty mode, where you're, you know, fighting a lot of dudes and trying to get the choreography as spectacular as possible.
Yeah.
But then you have the levels that are like, oh no, we're playing Hotline Miami now. You're going to die in a few hits because there's a guy with a gun off screen shooting you. And it's like the two different mentalities needed to be woven together a little bit better for me in that regard.
I was glad that, because yeah, like you said, there's 40 levels. So I was glad that the gimmick stuff, there's only like five in total, like where they sort of go, okay, now it's a boat chase and you're taking out some boats with a machine gun. Thankfully, they didn't get in the way too much. However, the back quarter of that game becomes more gun heavy anyway. And so that was the biggest criticism of Hotline Miami, that like it became more, they relied too much on the guns. And Hotline Miami 1's a way tighter game overall, but then Hotline 2 was all about the guns, which is why it reviewed a lot, you know, less favorably and a lot of people bounced off it. And it's almost like Svinzel, or the dude's name, loves Hotline so much that he's like, I'm going to have the back part of my game have a ton of guns in it too. Because that's what they did. And it's like, yeah, but you probably could have just got by with the power fantasy stuff. Like, you didn't need the old roadblocks in the way.
That is another thing that's kind of just, it's good in isolation, but it doesn't necessarily gel for me personally, because the way that they've animated a lot of the shooting in the game, like, looks cool. You know, you've got
straight out of John Wick.
Yeah, you've got John Wick style stances. Like, it looks spectacular, but the execution just isn't that 10 out of 10 that I want, or even necessarily 9 or 8 out of 10. You know, it kind of falls a little bit below that for me. And I feel like I've been, you know, dragging it quite a lot.
No,
but I do want to shout out one good thing that I do like, and that is the variety in the levels. Like you said, there are 40 there. And while sometimes the level design might get in its own way, in my opinion, I do think it's incredible how much variety there is in the actual visuals of each level. Like, that's always been so cool and a real driving force for me to get through the game. That, alongside with the enemy variety, both in terms of their cosmetics and fighting styles, like, that is, without a doubt, for me, the best thing about the game in terms of its execution in comparison to what it set out to achieve.
Oh, mine's definitely the combat. Like, I think I'm just higher on the combat than you overall. Like, I love all the environment, like the amount of objects, because they have a whole vision mode where it'll be like, hey, by the way, everything around you is pick-up-able, so like go grab whatever and like throw a Hoover into someone's face or a vacuum. I love all that stuff. So, like, I do love the feel of the combat. Also, I think, like, just to like finish a point about the combat, I feel like they bring in the Doom combat chest stuff towards the end, because you're going up against so many dudes with guns or groups of dudes where two of them have guns, that you need to prioritize getting to them, disarming them, using that weapon to take out three or four dudes, and then get back to the melee stuff. So I quite like how they kind of make you think in that way. Like, you're sort of thinking in a different way than you were at the start. And your unlocks are just, like, ridiculous. Like, you get a gun that can fire, like, electric bolts to freeze dudes.
Yeah.
You get a mind control bullet, because why not? You also get a rope, so it's, like, just Scorpion's rope from Mortal Kombat, where you can just spear dudes, or, like, you can pull their guns off them, or you can close the distance with it. So I do like how much they bring in. And for me, I think that, like, for me, that stuff all came together. Like, it made it, like, very differentiable to something like Sifu. And because it is such a Power Fantasy overall, like, that was what it did the best kind of thing. 3D brawlers just don't happen anymore. We had a big resurgence of 2D brawlers very recently. There's obviously Shredder's Revenge and, like, Mother Russia Bleeds and Streets of Rage 4. But I feel like 3D stuff, I don't know if you're like me where you miss that genre, but, like, I used to love Urban Reign. And even the Minority Report game, I randomly mentioned that because that game is a really good brawler. I think that's one of the reasons that this is still, like, super recommendable. If you miss arcadey brawler stuff, it does this in a way that I couldn't just give someone Sifu, because that game will eat them alive.
Okay.
Or in a way that you can just give people Midnight and they'll at least be able to punch a dude and DDT, suplex him within the first few minutes.
No, it's true. And again, I would recommend it as well. You know, I still like the game overall. Mm. I still think it is a good game. Mm-hmm. It's just that I'm holding it up to these great, you know, like these, like, games that I absolutely loved, and it's falling short from that. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's not good, because it is, and I would definitely recommend it if you got Game Pass, because, you know, why not?
You should definitely give it a shot.
Jump into it. I would agree that it is, like, you know, very accessible, and when you're getting those Power Fantasy moments, it makes it all worthwhile, you know?
I just want to kick a guy in the face.
I want to kick a guy in the nuts.
I don't know there's that many low blows in this game.
Only a few.
There's that. You can unlock a nut punch in Sifu. It's a very well choreographed nut punch.
I think it's a nut kick in Midnight Fight Express.
I think in my... Oh, yes, it is. Yeah. If ever need be.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But anyway, speaking of other things, Splatoon 3, which initially I was quite disappointed by when I first launched it, because it is a game of, it's a sequel of refinement. It's a sequel where Splatoon 2 was perfect. Like, you know, Splatoon 2 or nigh on perfect. Especially in terms of gameplay. Like, if you came off Splatoon 1, obviously there was a lot of carryover, but then Splatoon 2 just absolutely nailed it, and there was a reason that Splatoon 2 was held up so much as, like, oh my god, this is one of the best games on, I think it was already on the Wii U, but on the Switch. Only on the Switch. And I feel like with Splatoon 3, Nintendo just sort of went, well, we know what we're doing, we're not going to really change up too much. The feel is nigh on identical, so we're just going to add more weapons, add more ultimate moves that you can unlock as you take out dudes, and, you know, add, like, bits more of the single player. They kind of experimented with single player on the Octopath expansion to Splatoon 2. And so you kind of get that baked in. But all of that kind of made me go, what have I actually paid for? Like, it's only quote unquote £50, which I know in Switch stuff is always super high. So 50 wasn't that bad in the grand scheme of things. But I was kind of like, this feels a bit like an expansion pack. This feels a bit like a DLC. And it's only when you spend more time with it that all the little tweaks they've done kind of do make for a grander, like a greater whole, let's say, overall, because they have removed just little annoyances. Like, they've sped everything up. So the loading times are very, very little. And they've added way more customization. Like I said, you've got way more weapons and everything. And they've removed things like in Splatoon 2, whenever you would go into the game, it would tell you what's happening in the world for like a bunch of text prompts for a while, and you have to button through all that stuff. So they've sped all that stuff up. So you can just do a Splatoon a lot faster than you could in Splatoon 2. But I think it's worth flagging that this is just more Splatoon. Like, it's if you already loved it, you'll continue to love it. If you didn't before, there's nothing here to get you in that wasn't there before.
What if, like me, you've never played Splatoon, but don't necessarily dislike the idea of it? Is this the one to jump into right now? Like, if you've not played it, is this the natural?
Oh, dude, like, the thing is, like, I mean, this is all I played this weekend. I love Splatoon anyway, but I think the balancing that they've got here, the way that they make it, so that, because you can't change your weapon once you've fired into a game. You can change it in between rounds. So, like, you're stuck with whatever you pick. The way that they've made it, and this was always the case in Splatoon, but the way that they've doubled down on the balancing side of it, where whatever weapon you pick largely will dictate your playstyle, and if you go against that, even remotely, you will get taken out. Like, you know, you will just get dominated by people who have played a lot of this. I mean, Splatoon 2 was what elevated it to an esport. Like, it's a lot of people, it's like Call of Duty, like a lot of people play a hell of a lot of Splatoon. But the balancing side of it is what I love, because it really does feel like each weapon is its own class, which is something I can't say about Call of Duty. Like, obviously you build a loadout, but I just use the M4. Like, I've used so many guns, and I just go back to the M4. It's not changing how I play, really. I'm going to hold the left trigger, then press the right trigger.
I'm going to go with it.
But in Splatoon, obviously one of the core mechanics that you have is that you can just become ink, which lets you sort of phase through parts of the environment, but it also means that you can disappear inside any of your own team's ink blots. So you can kind of just do dynamic stealth or ambushes in the moment. Like, you see a dude coming around a corner, it's like, I'm just going to disappear into the floor. Guy's going to run right past me. I'm going to pop up behind him and take him out. Or you can just do all these different tactics that you wouldn't have in any other game. And I think it's that hybridized approach mixed with ranged weapons, shotgun style weapons, weapons that lay down way more ink, so all of you have like a path to get round the enemy. Like, things like that that just elevate Splatoon. Like, there's an immediacy to how well it plays and how well it feels that was there in 2, but it's elevated here. Coupled with the overall presentation, like, I love the Squid Kids. I love the look of the whole thing. It's so hyper-colored and gorgeous. And the music's great. Like, it's got its own genre, like Squid Punk. I'm just like, that's so cool that they just made a genre of music that sounds like a bunch of squids trying to make music. It all really does come together. I just need to flag that it is more Splatoon. But if you want more Splatoon, it ticks that box.
Hey, I've heard this game has a story mode, Scott Tilford. How is that? Because that's new, right? That's something that you've added in?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they did the Octopath expansion, which brought in the Octolings in Splatoon 2, and then all Splatoon games are all about the great Zapfish being kidnapped. So that's happened again. They largely are self-aware with that, where they're just like, oh, it's happened again. Someone's got to go and get the Zapfish back. And so you're doing them very little, to be honest. I mean, I haven't done that much of the single player stuff. It's well put together. It has like a 3D platformer sensibility where it's like a hub area, like Mario style, where you're sort of running through like a big open space and you go through little portals to do little mini quests, little mini levels, and then you beam back to the main bit. And you're just playing as your character that you can customize and everything. And you have like a little dude, like a little mini, I don't know what fish he is. He's called like Little Buddy or something, and you can give him like a mohawk. And you're like firing him at different parts of the environment to clear obstacles, to get further, to unlock more levels, to do more stuff. But the story mode is just a nice addendum. Like, the main meat and potatoes is the multiplayer, but the story does give you unlockables and does give you card packs. There's a new like card mini game in here. So it's worth playing the story. Plus, they show you tactics that you can use in the multiplayer. Like, there's ways to get around. Like, you can activate like ink jets in some of the maps that will carry you from area to area, but you might miss them if you didn't know what to look for. So the one of the story levels like points that out. Like, I've played, I don't know, 7 hours of multiplayer. I've done like 45 minutes of the story.
Right. Okay.
Story is not why people play Splatoon. So it's fun that it's there. And the Octolink stuff was really fun too in Splatoon 2. The boss battles were really inventive. So I'm kind of hoping for more of that in 3, but I haven't got that far yet. So yeah, I wouldn't say buy it for the story. Yeah. It's a gameplay focused, multiplayer focused game. But yeah, I think if you like the vibe, it's a perfect place to start.
I might get this for Christmas. You know, Splatoon I've always been interested in from afar, and I know that you said no one buys Splatoon for the story, especially you shouldn't necessarily do it for this
until now.
But that might be my in. You know, right. It might be the thing that kind of like allows me to dip my toe into the ink, for lack of a better term.
Yeah,
and then I'll dive headfirst into the multiplayer potentially after that.
I would absolutely tell you to not do that. I would say play the multiplayer. I think you'll bounce off it if you only play the story.
Okay.
Because it's so drip fed. It's like an elongated tutorial, drip fed, ironically. I would say if you're going to just, I mean, you can get Splatoon 2 for really cheap now, although most of the live event stuff has gone away.
There you go.
The thing is with Splatoon, that I think another thing that makes it so unique is that it operates on like a quasi live timer. The whole point is that you have live DJs, characters in the world, that are telling everybody about the Splatfest stuff that's going on and the various competitions that are happening. So you can only play 2 levels per mode for each hour, and then they rotate, which like forces people to, you know, get used to those maps and everything. But it does mean that you have like a live like rotation to the game modes, which I like that idea. Like, I do think that like that does kind of keep it fresh, and it makes you coming back to see what's next kind of thing. But yeah, you want to get involved in all that stuff, the customization, the unlockables, the leveling up, the XP boosts and everything else. Like, it's a really robust package in that regard. Story's kind of just there to something to shoot. I mean, I was playing on the train because it's offline. Everything else is like online. So yeah, I would just say if you're going to play Splatoon, you should play the multiplayer. But I know you, and you'll play the story. So we'll...
I'll play both. I'll have a good time, eh?
Maybe eventually you'll play both. Last thing down that we had in terms of what we're playing is Immortality, a game that kind of came out of nowhere. I remember this game being announced as Sam Barlow's next game. Barlow of Her Story and Telling Lies fame. Her Story was the game that won Best Narrative in 2015 at the Game Awards. Viva Cifer, I think, won Best Actress as well, or Best Lead Character. I adored and do adore Her Story. I didn't play Telling Lies. Mm-hmm. Forget why, really. I just kind of didn't really get around to it. But Immortality is his third game in this vein, where you're sort of analyzing. Well, you can kind of describe it. It's like FMV type stuff.
Honestly, man, from the moment I realized this game existed to hitting the 100% completion trophy, I have not had... Well, I have. I've had one better gaming experience this year, and that was Elden Ring.
Right.
This game is coming in hot number 2 of this year so far, because I've just loved it, man. Like, going into it, just seeing it on Game Pass. Funnily enough, I was messaging you about this. I went on Game Pass to download Midnight Flight Express and Grid Legends.
And Tinykin. I love Tinykin.
And in between all of those games sat Immortality, and the cover kind of appealed to me, and I thought, what's this? Then I saw some screenshots, and I thought, I'm going to just take a punt on this. I'm going to try it out. I didn't know it was Sam Barlow's game or anything. And then I booted it up and jumped in, and my lord, to give you like a general overview of what it is, essentially it's a live action game where you're watching footage from 3 different movies and the behind the scenes footage that was shot for those movies as well, because you were kind of trying to figure out the mystery of why this actress called Marissa Marcel disappeared. All you know is that she disappeared. She hasn't been seen for like 20 years or whatever. And none of her movies that you're watching right now, these 3 movies, ever came out for various different reasons. And you start off with one piece of footage that is a chat show interview that Marissa was doing after she completed her first movie. Mm-hmm. And the whole gameplay gimmick is you're analyzing this footage and you're clicking on objects within the frame to match cut to another piece of footage that you will then unlock. So for instance, in this interview, if you click on Marissa's face, you will cut to another scene starting on her face, and you'll be able to watch it from there. And you're essentially putting together all of the footage that way. So if you click on a plant pot, you'll go to a scene with a plant pot that might be 2 decades in the future from a completely different film. And it's got so many layers to the story that I don't even want to spoil, because figuring out the story and also the mechanics of the game gave me some of the best surprising moments of the year. Like, playing this, and once everything started to click, into gear, and once you finally understanding what the game is actually about, there was nothing else like it, man. I was like, you know the expression, left your jaw on the floor.
Yes.
I genuinely had my jaw like agape at certain points within the story, because I couldn't believe that I'd found this extra level to the game that I didn't even know what was there in the first place. I'm going to talk more about it and gush more about it, but I know that you haven't necessarily jumped at the chance to play this game since I yelled at you about it.
Well, I downloaded it because anything that like either of us like effusively recommend, chances are we'll give it a shot because we trust each other kind of thing. So I downloaded it. But the thing is, like, I knew it was, when I looked at it again, I missed it. When it dropped on Game Pass, I saw the little tile for it on the selection of games that were out, and I just didn't give it a second thought. And then when you said it was brilliant, I went on it and I was like, oh, Sam Barlow's new game. I do remember this being mentioned. I think that made me run a mile was just like the thumbnail that's on the trailer, where it just looks like a bunch of backstage footage. It looks like an FMV game, and the FMV genre is not my thing.
Right.
Like, I didn't like the bunker. I forget what, like, even the really old, it's not Dragon Quest, the old Dragon's Lair games, never been a huge fan of them. I love the animation, but I was never bothered about watching something for a few minutes to have one button input for another 10 minutes or whatever it is. And so the FMV genre I've always bounced off. So when I saw this, just in visuals, it just made me go, nah, I'm not bothered about this. But with it being Sam Barlow, like I said, I love her story. That game is a phenomenal like murder mystery, woman's being accused of something that happened. And it's a very similar gameplay mechanic where in her story, you're searching off the transcripts. So you're kind of watching footage and she'll say something like, what do you mean? There wasn't even a knife there. And then you'll search the word knife and it's like, okay, that pops up in this clip that you've just now unlocked because you're searching this archive. And you do that, or you look for the word father. And then you start thinking like a detective and you start searching words like, murder or blood or whatever.
Yeah.
And that leads you down this rabbit hole and you're putting everything together and you start using in real life a notebook like a detective would. And her story unfolds that way, where like it actually plays into that as the story unfolds, where it's like, oh, actually, you have agency as this person, as this character you've invented in your own head as this detective. And because while you're playing, you can hear, like you're in like a library, you're in like a police library accessing the archive. So you can hear like the lights, you can hear people talking behind you. And then it's like, okay, that plays into the story. It's like, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I love what her story was. It's only on PC or Mac or whatever. So I like that this dude has sort of expanded on these quote unquote signature mechanics that I guess came about in her story.
What you mentioned there about, not necessarily liking the look of the game and not wanting to watch a load of footage. You need to be in the mood to watch a load of footage with this game.
Oh, dude, I don't mind watching footage. It was just, right. It's what the footage looked like. It was all like frilly dresses and Victorian stuff. And I was like, that's a hard sell for me. Right. Like, I don't care about the past for the most part. Give me future stuff.
Well, yeah. This is the thing. This is not a game I'd necessarily recommend to everyone, because you have to be, one, a fan of the movies that this game is kind of like recreating, and two, you have to have a lot of patience for just watching scenes unfold, because I think from what I know about their Sam Barlow's other games, this may have even fewer mechanics in it. You are literally just doing the match cuts and you are piecing most of the things together in your head. There is a scrubbing mechanic where you can go through footage slower and quicker, you know, just like scrub through and look for certain things. However, you're literally just kind of clicking on things and watching things and kind of piecing the story together within your head. However, the thing that appealed to me first and foremost was the way that these movies are recreated, because there's an incredible level of detail to each period that is represented here. Like, the, without spoiling too much about what the movies are about, the first one that you unlock is called Ambrosia, and it's a 1968 religious erotic film.
Okay.
And it goes hard on a lot of, like...
I'm sure it goes hard, man.
It certainly does. Hey. It goes hard on a lot of the content, but
half
also...
10 a.m. we're recording this.
Just the way it kind of gets the vibe of those movies from the time, you know, it's a European production with an American director.
Okay.
And that kind of comes through in the visuals and in terms of the behind the scenes footage that you see as well. All of that is so authentically created, and the way that the camera quality kind of changes depending on which movie you're on and what kind of footage you're looking at, to me was just incredible. Like, there is a lot of there are a lot of rehearsal scenes as well, where you're seeing kind of like the actors play out scenes before they were eventually shot on the day. And, you know, like that stuff, like it looks like it was shot, you know, the night before on a crappy soundstage because it would have been at the time,
yeah,
I mean? Whereas the opulent kind of like gorgeous period costumes and period backdrops like come through in the actual footage. And is like obviously a huge movie fan of all of these periods that are represented. Like I love that stuff. If the game was literally just rewatching these scenes front to back with no mystery, with no story on top of that, I would have still loved it because, man, the way they nail it. I've seen actual movies released in cinemas trying to be period pieces that don't have anywhere near the level of authenticity that these video game movies have. Like, it's to me, it's just, like I said, as a fan of that, of the genres and the periods that they're representing, like, I've not seen better than this.
I think, and also being able to add on, like, a set of gameplay mechanics or, like, a through line, a mystery that connects all those things together. Like, that's what I think, I have to assume that Telling Lies has something similar as well, but that whole quote-unquote mechanic of, like, searching within clips or searching within, because the whole, like, tagline with this is, like, you're searching within match cuts, like you said before as well. I think that idea of, like, adding an extra layer onto it so it's not just like an FMV game, because a lot of FMV games, like I mentioned The Bunker, is you're watching like a production that looks quite cheap, and it's sort of like every now and then a button pops up on screen and you can dictate which clip triggers next. And I think the FMV genre gets boxed in that way, which is what puts me off it, like just from a, you know, from a distance kind of thing. But there's clearly so much more to this that stitches it all together and like elevates it.
And I get that as well. You know, FMV games in the past I've been wary of because I've worried about the quality of the production, of the acting and stuff. But no joke, If old Jeff wants us to vote on the for the Game Awards this year, I will be voting all of these actors because their performances are next level. You know, the fact that you're watching an actor play an actor do a scene and then be directed by an in-universe director. Like, there are so many layers to it, and that's intentional. That comes through in the story themes as well. But, like, the main performance of Marissa, you know, the actor who plays Marissa, like, she's unbelievable. Like, in the emotional scenes, like, you get invested in the fake movies because she's so good, and then having the extra layer of who Marissa is and why is she doing these movies, why is she making these choices, who is she outside of the characters that she's portraying, man. Like, it's just so rich.
I think
it's so rich.
I'm definitely going to give it a shot. And I'll just say right now that I'm just so glad this game exists.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, you know, if any part of you thinks that the, you know, certain aspects of the industry get stale and repetitive and formulaic and boring and whatever, just be glad this exists. Be glad that Xbox has a Game Pass program that they choose to put this on to get in front of millions of people. Yeah, like I said, I've already downloaded it, so I want to dive into it. It reminds me of, in terms of being glad it exists, something like 12 Minutes, where even if I'm not a fan of it, I'm just glad that it's out there.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we should have more ambitious story-driven stuff and not just mechanical gacha loot stuff.
Totally.
It's nice to have.
100%. Like, there's nothing like this, even in terms of Sam Barlow's other games. Obviously, mechanically, they're quite similar, but in terms of aesthetics, in terms of story, I've never played anything like this. And for better or worse, because a lot of people are going to say, I've never played anything like this and I don't want to play anything like this again. And that's fair. Because
I'm
like,
done with video games.
100%. I like how hard it goes on its on the things it finds interesting, because you can tell that Sam Barlow and everyone else really finds this stuff interesting and really wants to make a movie about, I'm trying to keep as vague as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
The surprises are the best thing about this game, about these themes and about these time periods and about these kinds of movies. But obviously that means it's not recommendable to people who, you know, might prefer a Midnight Fight Express. That's totally valid, but it's just such a niche.
Are you telling me there are no belly-to-back suplexes in Immortality?
There are no suplexes. There may be other things in there that are similar to Midnight Fight Express, but I couldn't possibly
spell it. The Venn diagram. At least there's some middle ground for that Venn diagram. My final question for Immortality is, how long is it? Is it quite a tight package, or is it a long boy?
It depends what you want to do, because there's so much footage within there that you could get the main kind of mystery and the main story in maybe like 6-7 hours and then never touch it again. I was engrossed so much and thinking about it so much that I wanted every piece of footage, so I played it for 20 hours. I just went way beyond the credits and the final reveals and then wanted everything within there. So it's essentially as long as you, it's as long as you want it to be.
Yeah. Awesome. Color me very curious. Well, I'll see if I can dive in this week. Maybe we'll devote a wind up to the spoiler cast or something. Anyone can get in touch with us on Twitter. Let us know if they're playing through it or if they're going to pick it up as well. And we'll just see what happens. I'm very curious. Like I said, Her Story was one of my games of the year back in 2014. And I didn't get around to telling lies, even though it does star Logan Marshall Green. That was such a utilization of the budget he got because of Her Story. And then this seems like an even bigger production, which is cool. But yes, for now, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilford. You've been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.